Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, June 21st, 2001. In the fireside room this evening is Jan Bowman. Today's session number is BOJ 2001-3, and it's entitled Understanding Meditation as a Spiritual Practice. Let's listen in.
First, we discussed what is healing. It's a huge topic, and we had many excellent responses. But chiefly, I think we said that that healing takes place, or needs to take place, when there's been a disintegration of body, mind, and spirit. And so integration, or wholeness, were terms that were used quite a bit. In our society, the body has often been feared, or else punished, or regarded in very unhealthy ways. And we looked at poetry in a collection by Marilyn Sewell and others in order to look at how regarding the body as a vessel for what is sacred, what is spiritual in us, would help us a great deal in understanding how to approach healing. Secondly, in the second section or session, we explored the connections between healing and meditation. And it was at that session that I showed an introduction to Christian meditation and how it builds Christian community. I'd simply like to say here that often meditation is thought of as a solitary kind of practice. And in my experience with meditation over these last 4 years, I've come to know the depth of community that can develop, particularly if you find a group with which to meditate. And in my case, Jerry and I found one in a nearby town, and then I started a group in our parish. So we have two communal experiences a week, and in addition, Jerry and I meditate every day together. That has been a wonderful deepening of our companionship. I have more of the little flyers here on Christian meditation, which includes a website and a directory of Christian meditation groups under this rubric of World Community for Christian Meditation. So if you have that capacity to get on the internet, then you can look up where you might be able to find a group near you. If not, I'd encourage you to write to the national coordinator, whose address is on there. Her name is Mary Sue Anderson, and she lives in Santa Barbara, and she would help you find one. I'd also like to encourage you to see Al Rail if you're seeking more assistance with meditation or with spiritual direction. As you've heard, he's come to the village to start a program of spiritual direction here. And now I think we're ready to begin our discussion for the evening, so let's open with prayer. Creator God, open our hearts to the silent presence of the Spirit of your Son. Lead us into that mysterious silence where your love is revealed to all who call upon your name. Amen. Now, I think Sonia Dahl is here. Sonia, are you here? Okay, Sonia. You're an artist, I understand. Would you like to interpret this? What do you see on the board here?
Oh, you want me to just interpret?
Yeah, just tell me what you see here.
It looks like a mandala. It looks like a wheel.
Okay.
It looks like an eye. First thing that comes to mind is wagon wheel. My high school was the Pioneer, so I think wagon wheel whenever I see something like that. Think of the Native American medicine wheels.
It's interesting how you can see many things, right, in
yes.
The symbol. I'm just absolutely thrilled that you see something. I was seriously concerned about it. Okay, let's think of it for a moment as a wheel of prayer, because we're going to be considering the question, what is prayer and what do we think of as kinds of prayers as Christians? So for a moment, let's just brainstorm, you know, that interesting activity where you throw out all kinds of answers to these questions. First of all, what is prayer? What comes to your mind immediately? You know, let's not try to filter too much.
Conversation,
talking with God.
Listening.
Quiet time.
Focus time.
Expressing concerns, okay.
Giving thanks.
Making requests.
Yes.
Gratitude,
okay?
Communion with God.
Intercession.
Now, we could go on for a long time, couldn't we? Because if prayer is conversation with God, or prayer is listening to God, and we believe it's both, right? There is many kinds of prayer, I suppose, as there are possibilities for listening to God and talking with God, right? But some of the words that you use beg to be categorized. So let's put some labels. And by the way, excuse me for being barefoot. You may do the same, okay? I invite you to take your shoes off. Let's put some labels on these folks. Somebody said intercessory prayer, right? Making requests is similar, okay?
Thanksgiving,
okay, prayers of Thanksgiving.
What about lament?
Pardon?
What about lament?
Lament.
Okay. Thanksgiving, what? I had one sister who suggested praying for what you're thankful for, what you're sorry for, what you need. So what you need intercessory, what you're thankful for, and what you're sorry for, lament.
Mm-hmm. Good. So lament is just a fancier word for
what you're sorry for.
Right, what you're sorry for. Okay, good.
Praise,
okay. Yes.
Confession.
Others.
Contemplative.
Okay. Now for a moment, I'm going to put it up here. I'll just bring it a little bit. What would you say holds all of those together? What is the hub of that wheel of prayer for you?
God.
Okay, God holds it all together.
Mm-hmm. The Trinity,
okay. It's another way of saying God, okay. Anyone else?
Finding quiet time. Yeah.
Okay. Finding quiet time. Other response?
Relationship with God.
Okay, there has to be, are you saying a personal relationship with God? All right. Which of these kinds of prayers would you call word prayers? That is, mental prayers, prayers that we put into words.
All but the contemplative.
Would most of you agree with that, or do you differ about that?
Some people silently confess their sins, so I don't know if that would necessarily be in words.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of prayer is intuitive too, and sort of it just is a part of you, a part of your daily life. What you give thanks for, what you admire around you.
Yes, What are we going to call the prayers that well up, you know, that don't seem to come from here? We don't say, well, now I'm going to pray, you know, or even as we do in worship, now we'll pray the Lord's Prayer together, something like that. But the prayer that seems to be a wellspring, right? Okay? Are they sort of midway between contemplative and other kinds of prayer? Well, we could carry on this discussion for a very long time. Actually, I'm going to assert that contemplative prayer is here. That out of silence, all of these other prayers arise. And I was born and raised in the tradition that we call Lutheran. And I can tell you how I learned to pray. Can you tell me how you learned to pray? Did you learn to pray in a contemplative fashion? Mm-hmm. How did you learn to pray?
Rote.
Okay. You were taught some prayers first at home, Claudia, or?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And in Sunday school.
Sunday school, right. And these became something like formulas, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember acronyms that we memorized. And which come first, you know, never the petition. No, let's not ask God for the, before we thank and praise God, right? Well, that's a just kind of relationship or lineup, isn't it? Because God's given us so much, why should we be knocking constantly on God's door to say, open up again, you know, here I am, I have a dozen more needs. I think that made me feel, for the most part, that this wellspring kind of prayer may not be exactly right. Mm-hmm. Because first I would have to thank and praise, right? And then I could come to whatever it was that was arising out of my
feelings.
Yeah, feelings. Okay, good. Feelings, yeah. I would have to tell you that most prayer for me, the training in prayer, was cerebral or mental. That I memorized prayers, that I was taught how to pray, including certain, and I am not trying to say that that was wrong. I'm simply trying to say that contemplative prayer life, prayer that takes place in silence or stillness, was not a part of my upbringing. Now, I'd like to hear from those who did have that as a part of their early religious education. Anyone in this room have some kind of encouragement for that?
No.
Well, yes,
I don't know what you mean, but my sister and I used to kneel in front of the bed to say our, you know, letting them to sleep.
Mm-hmm. It was a verbal prayer, however. Yeah. Do you remember being encouraged to spend time, quiet time that was in silence, to listen for God, or simply to be present with God?
I learned that as I got older.
Not as
a child.
Okay. Anyone else want to tell us a story or give us an example?
I had a friend who told me that she had two boys, and they lived a long way from their grandparents, and when the two boys got old enough to go visit their grandparents on the plane alone by themselves for the very first time, the younger one said to her, as they were at the airport getting ready to board the plane, "Gee, Mommy, I'm really, really scared about getting on this airplane." And she told him, and I thought this was really brilliant, she said, "Maybe you need to talk to God about this and call on God for help." Mm-hmm. And his response was an indignant one, "Not that scared," which I thought was But I thought her response was really good, you know, because I never would have thought to teach my children to call on God for help in situations like that. It wasn't like, "Oh, gee, maybe I shouldn't send you on this big airplane all by yourself." It was, "Well, maybe you should call on God for help." And I thought that was really great, because it's not exactly contemplative, but it sort of is in the realm.
Yeah. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. It very much is. In fact, I just was asked to review a new book that's been written for children to begin them in the contemplative prayer or meditative tradition. And it's, you know, it's got the typical children's book illustrations, and it talks about things that can come up in a child's day, such as things go all wrong at breakfast and you get scolded, or you might just want to go to your room and sit quietly and say to yourself, Jesus, Jesus, you know, or any word that would calm yourself. But I think the word Jesus is important here because little kids are learning about Jesus. And then, you know, you get to school and you get in a fight, same thing. Try to find a corner of the playground where you could just stand and be by yourself and find comfort in that. And I know that meditation is being used in schools now to encourage children to focus, to encourage them to think good thoughts about themselves. Now, this is not entirely nonverbal because they're supposed to sit and think, I am good at, you know, and then list the things. But it has a very calming effect, and teachers claim that it's better than some drugs for ADD, which would be quite a breakthrough, wouldn't it? Yes, Karen.
Our oldest daughter's husband died of leukemia, as you know, and it was a long process, and she began to feel like she couldn't pray anymore, and that words were so inadequate. And someone, she was in email correspondence with lots of friends, and someone told her that in these days of sorrow, every breath you take is a prayer. And that was the most helpful thing to her.
Isn't that an enormous comfort? And you know my story too, and you know that there were no words. I mean, that's exactly what happened to me. Now, I'm not saying that that is the only way that one comes to meditation or contemplative prayer, but I think most of us would agree that often our words, our images, fall short when it comes to praying the prayer that our soul needs. There are situations in life, there are emotions, there are crises, tragedies that are just too huge for words. And it's at times like that where the mere act, and I shouldn't say mere, the simple act of breathing in spirit, whatever you want to call it. But when we're talking about a Christian tradition, it would be the breath of life. And that breath of life is spirit. And specifically, it's the spirit which gave us life in the first place. The spirit that moved over the face of the deep. I know that in my own case, I grew increasingly busy and burdened by work. I loved my work, but I was burdened by it. And life all around me was hectic anyway. Now I see a lot of heads nodding and I wonder why. That's the nature, isn't it, of life in contemporary society. Eventually, I was breathing, I'm sure, in a very shallow way. What that did to my health over a period of time, I can't tell you, but I think most of us do not really practice deep breathing from the belly, you know, from the belly. Now, I'm going to make this sound like something entirely physical. It is, and it isn't. It's physical because you must breathe to live, right? But if you breathe in, thinking of the spirit that created you, maybe not even thinking, just being in that spirit, and then breathing out. There are guided meditations for people who are ill that include breathing in the goodness of creation, the goodness of the healing that is possible for you, breathing in healing kinds of thoughts, words, and breathing out whatever toxins fill your body. You can image this in such a way that it truly helps. Now, I've brought a book with me called Prayers of the Cosmos, Meditations on the Aramaic Words of Jesus by Neil Douglas Coates. And this is a rather remarkable little book. Have any of you seen this? Recognize it? He has translated the Aramaic for all of the parts of the Lord's Prayer, we call them petitions, right? And the Beatitudes into English, having studied Aramaic very closely. And he's done this both literally, and then he has imaginatively put the phrases or the petitions into words that might make sense to us in our contemporary life. And I want to read part of one, which is the from the Beatitudes. And remember the other day, those of you who were here, we talked about blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And we had different attitudes or different ideas about what poor in spirit means. And now I'd simply like to read a couple of his translations of the Aramaic. Happy and aligned with the One, capitalized with the One, you could say God, are those who find their home in the breathing. I'll repeat that. Happy and aligned. Remember how we talked about balance, harmony? We're beginning to see how Eastern philosophies and religions have taught more about balance and harmony. It's very critical for us, for all of us. Happy and aligned with the One are those who find their home in the breathing. To them belong the inner kingdom and queendom of heaven. And another translation, healed are those who devote themselves to the link of spirit, who devote themselves to the link of spirit. The design of the universe is rendered through their form. The design of the universe is rendered through their form, meaning that we are part and parcel of all creation. And there is this alignment, this beautiful harmony. This is my favorite poet, Gerard Manley Hopkins, talks about all the time, how we are every creature, every living thing, points to God because we show the pattern of God's love and redemption. Well, when we get out of alignment, when we aren't even breathing, you know, as we're created to breathe, then that's a sign that we need to come into the harmony of spirit for which and through which we were created. I do have a few copies of this particular one if anybody wants it afterwards. Okay. Let's get back to this center, the hub of the wheel. What is true of it that is not true of the exterior circle? It's not moving. Okay. It is the still point, right? Now, some of you are familiar with Thomas Keating's centering prayer. And just the name, you can tell. It's like the hub there. It's the still point. It's the focal point. It's the point to which we return. And so to call that point God is very accurate, I think. Without this still point at the center, no integration of action and contemplation is possible. Now, without getting terribly sophisticated about this, there are many, many poets who talk about action and contemplation. And I could have brought all those poems in. Instead, I thought I'd bring this down to earth and tell you that from the moment Jerry and I started loving each other and then eventually marrying and living with each other, I realized that one of us was a person of action and the other one was a person of contemplation. Okay. Now, of course, we're the only couple in the world of which this is true, right? Well, part of it was professional vocations. You know, Jerry was a pastor. He had to spend a lot of time in contemplation and so on. I was the mom, three little kids. I mean, unless you're active with children, you're lost, right? You've got to keep on the move. So sometimes I can't tell whether it was nature or nurture that did this. But at any rate, Jerry was always going off on retreat. He was going to St. Andrew's Abbey in the high desert, you know, and spending 3 days. And he, well, you know the story, and especially those of you who know Jerry. He's just a marvelous contemplative. People spot him in the village, and they just want to talk to him because they know he'll listen. I, on the other hand, have been quite a beehive of activity my whole life. So for me to learn to be still has been a tremendous, almost an overwhelming job. When I first started to meditate, I had itches in unimaginable places. You know, I just wanted to fidget. And recently, our friend Larry Johnson's wife, Sally, retired, and she started coming to our meditation group, too. And she said, I'll never make it. You know, I just, this is the way I am. Can't sit still for very long at all. Well, I truly believe that all of us have the active and the contemplative within us. And it's what gets nurtured that probably results in that particular poise. John Maine and Lawrence Freeman both talk about the stillness at the center of our being as the source of all of our activities. So that's a very important insight for me, because unless we have this source and it's a reserve of stillness, we're going to be quite lost in activity, right? Do you ever get that feeling that you're just that proverbial chicken running around, you know? 2 more minutes, I can do at least 10 more things. This still point, or this stillness, is the presence of God within us, and we all have it. It's remarkable how profound it is once you begin this practice, this spiritual practice, and you come to know the depth of that stillness. Now I think we'll close the door because it's getting kind of, thank you very much. So, see, there are some of us here who probably want to get to that jazz camp concert before Vespers, right? I would like to practice meditation again before the hour is over. And so at a certain point, I will say, we're going to begin meditating now. If you feel that you just need to get over there, you know, right at 7 o'clock, that's fine. I'll understand. I love jazz myself. But for the others, I think that we'll probably meditate until about 7:15. Does that sound all right with everyone? Mm-hmm. And then we can go over there. Well, a very old definition of Christian prayer is the raising of heart and mind to God. In Romans 8:26, we hear, we do not even know how to pray, but the Spirit prays within us. Or, I no longer pray, but Christ prays within me, Paul says. I believe that that experience, that kind of prayer, is difficult if we keep focusing the mental part of prayer and the attempt to find more and more eloquent words to express our needs. Contemplative prayer has normally been thought of in Protestant churches as something that Roman Catholic monks and nuns do. Is that true of your understanding of it, that it's for monks and nuns primarily? Or maybe for those wanting altered states of consciousness? I should probably say right now that in this Christian tradition of meditation, one is to have no particular expectations of what happens during that period. That in fact, the benefits of meditation for one's spiritual life aren't the stuff of visions during that prayer time or of the voice of God coming to one, but rather a very slow and gradual realization of the fruits of the Spirit, those same fruits that we hear about quite often, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, and so on. Well, how can meditation open the door to a deeper prayer of the heart? John Mayne, who founded or revived this art of meditation, this practice of meditation, said that meditation can't be taught, but it can be caught. And that makes me feel quite strange about sitting here telling you I'm really not teaching, I'm inviting you to practice. Because it truly is something that only experience can lead one into. A common impression of meditation, and one that you'll hear quite often, is that it's a relaxation technique. Have you ever heard that? In order to relax, reduce stress. I believe that's true. I simply think that it's more than that.
Can I ask a question about
that? Sure.
One of the things that I noticed last time was that when we went to our meditation, we didn't talk about the relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
For those, I think you said something about people being disassociated from their bodies. And I think for me, being disassociated from my body, it literally is something I need to do
mm-hmm.
before I actually start blanking out my mind. I need to focus on my muscles starting at the bottom, going to the top. And getting hung up on the shoulders for quite
mm-hmm.
a while before I can relax them. But in order to vacate my mind and relax and try to center myself, I really need to relax those muscles, to make a point of relaxing those muscles. Because,
mm-hmm.
And you hadn't mentioned that, and I'm
mm-hmm.
just wondering if that was something that is part of it, or you just does it just come automatically for you?
Well, I think at first it's very important, and it depends, you know, what sort of state are you when you come to your time of meditation? If you've been rushing around, some form of relaxing your muscles is extremely important. One of the men at the School for Teachers for Meditation that I just went to in Phoenix is a yoga instructor, and he led us in some stretches before we sat to meditate. It was extremely helpful. I think what you say is so important. It's going to vary for each person and for each time of day, but you know yourself how much preparation you need for meditation. It is not a good idea to rush to the place or the time where you meditate. And while we're talking about this, I'm glad you brought it up, because I think it's equally important to have a special place in your home, in your office, wherever it is that you're going to meditate, and to make that place a sacred space, whatever that means for you. Some people use pictures of one kind or another. Candles are almost always used. We have a Chinese gong that we use. If you saw the video, we strike that 3 times. I like to say that if my parents can, my parents have been gone 10 years, if they could see me now, wouldn't they really roar? Because this is pretty far from growing up in a pietistic Swedish home. you know, striking that Chinese gong. However, I think that it makes the time as well as the space sacred to have something like that. You can invent your own means. Other things about the practice, there are little rituals that surround the time of meditation that can be helpful. We always have in our meditation groups our reading that is very similar to what we used to call devotions or a short teaching. Or we listen to a tape talk by either John Maine or Lawrence Freeman. Oh, flowers. Flowers, candles, that sort of thing. And it isn't to accumulate paraphernalia. It's simply to set an atmosphere, just as you do in a sanctuary, in a religious place. I'd like to look for just a couple of minutes at what we remember, or just share what we remember about Jesus' teachings on prayer. Can anyone remember what Jesus said about praying or prayer?
You know how to do it in public, mm-hmm. Or it's displayed, you can go to your room and call it.
Okay, good.
Private will see, will hear you.
We'll hear you in secret or in private. Yeah. What do you think he meant by that private room?
Not necessarily literally. Mm-hmm. A room because he would sometimes go into, you know, wilderness to be alone. That's important.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else have an idea of what? I mean, I think it does literally mean a private space, you know, and not like the hypocrites who pray in public, right? That private room could, yes.
Well, I was thinking just more like a room within yourself that mm-hmm. comes out and then gets that mm-hmm. is the room. Maybe something that you don't visit maybe often enough or inward.
Yes, I think that's really quite a wonderful understanding of it. It's like your most interior place, the secret or mysterious part of yourself, the seat of your soul, maybe we could say. And if you haven't visited that place often enough, it could mean that you haven't developed your capacity to be in God's presence enough, your conversation enough. A lot of these teachings of Jesus about prayer are in the 6th chapter of Matthew, if you want to look at them later on. But one thing that comes out of Matthew 6, verse 8, is that prayer is not primarily about asking God for things, because God knows what we need before we ask. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's any sense of, you know, meditation must be wrong because I'm not articulating what I need, I think that really responds, that it responds to that verse. And then in the last part of the chapter 6, there's a great deal about anxiety. Anxiety being the enemy of God. Do not worry. And I have found in meditation that there is probably the most impetus for releasing those anxieties. One of the things that one could also say about poverty of spirit and meditation is that by simply letting go of the sense that we can have control over any of those worries that we have. It's this process of gradually letting go. We come to realize the really freeing gift of being rather than doing all the time. But I think that
Are there any questions right now? I know we didn't have time for questions after the video the other day. Are there any questions you would like to ask before we practice? I'm just going to remind everyone of the very simple guidelines, and then I will play some music as an introduction, and I will time it so that at 7:15 the period will be over. So if you would like to leave now, this is the question.
I just wanted to underscore one of the things that you said earlier in response to the question. It has to do with the expectations about what happens in meditation. What I heard was that the intent of meditation is not to have thoughts.
Right.
And I think to engage in that would be to engage yourself in a kind of constant battle. The intent, as I understand it, is really to let go of thoughts, and to allow the thoughts to appear as they appear, but not to be in combat with them, not to struggle with them, but to allow whatever happens to happen.
That's
and
correct.
I think that's a little bit of a term.
Yes, to allow it. Distractions will come.
Right.
In this particular tradition of meditation, if you find there are distractions, instead of beating up on yourself, just let them go. But that's a little bit different from letting the thoughts come and then continuing to think about those things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's. I think that focusing on not having any thoughts can be a distraction in itself. So it's probably not a good way to begin. Okay. So as you heard on the video, if you were here for that, sitting still is important. Try to sit still during the whole period of meditation, and that period should be at least a minimum of 20 minutes. And eventually one can grow accustomed to up to 30 minutes. And have good posture with your hands folded or here on your knees or in any other position that's, it's very important to be comfortable so that even the good posture should be relaxed good posture, not stiff or rigid. Close your eyes gently and breathe easily and naturally, preferably from the belly. And then begin to say silently within the word that you have chosen. And the word recommended is Maranatha, because it is in Aramaic and you will not be thinking about the meaning of it in English. It does mean, however, come Lord. Say it in four syllables of equal length. Focus on this word as a means of centering yourself. I often think of the mantra as an anchor. If you are distracted by thoughts, be gentle with yourself and return to your prayer word. I'm going to play some music to introduce the period, and then we'll meditate until I say the peace of Christ be with you.
peace of Christ be with you. I'm able to stay if anyone has questions or comments, but the session is over as far as that's concerned. I hope that you understand that 10 minutes or so can't really, and many of you have meditated already, so you know this too, but you have, I think, the sense of the calming of all of our thoughts and our distractions of ordinary life. And that in itself imparts a kind of peace. And I thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry. I'm just following this conversation.
I know.